It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. Good evening to the FM Talk 106.5 listening audience. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you guys so much for tuning into our program on Friday, January 8th, 2021. We're really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Miss Aquilyn Kennedy,
our
executive producer and chief brand strategist. The second, joining us by phone, will be Mr. Ollie Davidson, who is the deputy district director for Congresswoman Terry Sewell out of Alabama's District 7. The third, also joining us by phone, is Mr. Jason Fisher, who is chair of the Baldwin County Democratic Executive Committee. And last, but in no wise least, is Mr. Phil Bush, who is working the production board and waving to all of you in silence. So, how is everybody doing tonight?
We're fantastic. Yeah, good. We're hanging in here.
Good, good, good. Well, you know, it's we are blessed to be in 2021.
Yes, we are. Right? Very much so.
It was a challenging 2020, to say the least, but we were blessed to successfully navigate that. Got through the holidays, got through the new year, and we are still here in 2021.
Amen.
So I think we could simply say that God is good all the time.
And all the time. God is good.
Indeed. So for the agenda, in the top half of the hour, we'll start off with a legislative update with Mr. Ollie Davidson, representing Congresswoman Terry Sewell tonight for District 7. Then in the bottom half of the hour, we'll do a second spotlight, but this time with Mr. Jason Fisher, who will be representing the Baldwin County Democratic Executive Committee. And once we finish with the two of them, we'll open up the phone lines and text lines and see what it is that you have to say. So before we get into all that, let's review the headlines. The first headline comes from Politico. It reads, Congress certifies Biden's win after day of chaos and violence. It was co-authored by Kyle Cheney, Burgess Everett, Heather Cagill, Melanie Zanona, and Sarah Ferris. It was published on January 7th, 2021. The second headline comes from Alabama Political Reporter. It reads, Baldwin County Democrats Carl and Tuberville should apologize for votes to overturn election. It was written by John H. Glenn and published on January 8th, 2020. The third headline comes from CNN. It reads, Brad Raffensperger intends to certify the Georgia Senate runoff results by January 20th. It was co-authored by Amara Walker, Jason Morris, and it was published on January 8th, 2021. So, you know, as we were just going through all of that and talking about how we successfully navigated 2020, who would have thought that we would have this much activity in the very first week of 2021? It has truly been a lot. But just like we made it through 2020, this too shall pass. We will successfully navigate the challenges of 2021. And at the end of the day, we're all going to be better for it.
Yes, we will. Absolutely.
So with that, let's go to the phone lines and see if Mr. Davidson has joined us yet.
Hello. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Mr. Ollie Davidson. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fantastic. I appreciate this invitation to come and talk to you guys.
Well, we appreciate all that you do to support Congresswoman Sewell and our larger community. We know that our congressmen and women would not be able to do all the things they need to do if you guys weren't there supporting them. So thank you.
Thank you.
So
what I'd like to do tonight is I want to start off with giving you the opportunity to provide a legislative update for District 7. But before we do that, just so our listeners know exactly who you are, could you just take a moment to explain, you know, just kind of where you grew up, where you went to school, and how you ended up sitting in the chair that you're sitting in today?
Yeah, sure. Not a problem. I am actually from Mobile County by way of Pritchard, Alabama.
Pritchard, Alabama in the house.
Graduate of Mattis Thomas Blunt High School, class of 2001.
Go Blunt.
Yes, and I actually went to school at the University of South Alabama. And so I'm Mobile County through and through. I left, and when I left, I found my way to Selma, Alabama, where okay. I became the first chief of staff for the city.
Okay.
Under Mary Dario Milton's administration. We did some pretty good things in the city, and I caught the eye of a particular congresswoman. She thought I was doing some pretty good work, and she asked me to come and serve as her deputy district director. So now I'm living in Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that brief snapshot of your background. So we'll get into some of the specific events of this week a little bit later, but can you just take a few minutes, give the listeners an update, let them know what District 7 is comprised of here in the state of Alabama, and just open it up to you. Provide us with whatever update you and the Congresswoman would like us to hear.
No, not a problem. So the 7th Congressional District is, at this point, comprised of 14 counties.
Okay.
And of those 14 counties, the major cities are Birmingham, Montgomery, Tuscaloosa, and Selma, Alabama.
Okay.
We go as further north as Jefferson County and as further south as Clark County. So we are pretty connected to CD1, Congressional District 1.
Yes.
As we share Clark. There's just three major things that, you know, on the legislative update that we would like to touch on is the omnibus bill that passed on December the 21st.
Okay.
That COVID relief package was being debated. I'm pretty sure everybody knows about it right now. And they're actually feeling it because they're receiving their $600 stimulus payment. That was a $166 billion economic package.
Okay.
For those payments.
Mm-hmm.
The second major thing that we normally touch on is the Voting Rights Enactment Act, also known as H.R. 4, or the John Lewis Voting Rights Enactment Act. That is to cure the ills of the Voting Rights Act that was stripped by the Shelby versus Holder opinion that took place. So
we actually
will be correcting that and getting that legislation passed in this Congress. We're very excited because the Democrats have control of both the House and the Senate.
Yes, yes.
And the third thing that we want to focus on is infrastructure. We know that that's well overdue. That should have been done probably under the Obama administration, and we definitely thought we would get something under the Trump administration because he was a builder. So, but we didn't see any infrastructure bills. So we're looking to actually pass a major infrastructure package to fix some of these roads, bridges, and water and sewage in our district.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take the first and the third. We'll come back to the civil rights, voting rights legislation here in a second. But can you just take a quick second to explain to the audience what the omnibus bill is? Because this seems to come up year after year, and I know that people normally have questions about kind of the routine nature of what it is.
Well, an omnibus bill is just what it's defined as. It's a whole lot of money coming towards the district, and it's normally done towards the end of the year.
Okay.
But what Congress did was they combined that bill with the COVID relief legislation in order to get it passed.
Oh, okay. So it's like a big bundle.
Exactly. we use it to fund the government in a lot of ways.
Okay.
And if you can see a lot of different provisions about how that's done, but the main caveat of this bill in particular is because of the COVID.
Mm.
So when you're talking about $166 billion for stimulus payments for folks, you're talking $20 billion for vaccine relief for folks. We're talking $284 billion for that popular program, the PPP loans.
You know, I just want to insert there right quick. Of all of the things that I have heard about, either with what I'm doing on the radio show now or even what I was seeing, you know, what was happening in my day job, pretty much to a person, folks think that payroll protection kind of got it right, right? And we know for a fact that there are businesses that continue to remain afloat because they had those dollars come through. Now, that's not to say that there aren't things in payroll protection that can be approved. There always are. But that was one thing in particular that I found had good, pretty much bipartisan support across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. We always say in Congress that there will never be a perfect bill,
mm-hmm.
but there are some bills that get it right, and PPP was one of them.
Exactly. And so just to circle back and tie this off right quick, that the spending bill, the omnibus spending bill, the reason why that was kind of combined with the COVID-19 relief package was essentially to get the whole thing passed. Was that kind of what the motivation was?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You want to get as much bipartisan support with a bill like this, because we're talking billions and with a B and trillions with a T of dollars.
Absolutely. Okay, now I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent, and then I'm going to come back to the rest of your legislative update. So one of the things that happened this week was that in the Georgia runoff elections, Reverend Warnock and Mr. Ossoff, who are both Democrats, won their runoff elections. And so as a result of that, the composition of the Senate will change. It will be 50-50. And with Vice President-elect Harris coming in, she will be available to break the tie. So the Democratic Party will assume responsibility for the Senate chamber as well as the House chamber. So how did y'all feel about that out of Congresswoman Sewell's office? And now how does that change allow you to do the two things that you were mentioning there in your legislative update, the Voting Rights Act as well as the potential for infrastructure?
Well, we're very excited that the Democrats have control over the House and the Senate, as well as the White House, of course. It's a game changer. There's a lot of bills that sat on the majority leader's desk in the 116th Congress, which was this past Congress. And we thought that was some really good legislation that died.
Right.
In this Congress, with all the levers for at least the next 2 years, we believe that we can pass some really good legislation that'll help the American people.
Absolutely. And even though we differ philosophically, those of us who are center left versus center right, one of the things I think we can all agree is that things shouldn't just be sitting on people's desk, right? You can vote for it, you can vote against it, but let's just not have stuff sitting in purgatory. Because what I find in the conversations that I have, particularly when they're in bipartisan circles, is that at the end of the day, people just want someone to get something done as opposed to just sitting back and pointing fingers at each other and just kind of letting stuff fester.
Absolutely. Isn't that their job? I mean, people say that a lot. That's their job, to go over there and vote on bills, vote it up or down.
Either way.
Don't let it stall.
Either way. So one last thing on this, and then I'm going to touch on some more of the events that happened this week. Now with Senator Tuberville replacing Senator Jones in the Senate, Congresswoman Sewell is the sole federal representative that we have in the state of Alabama that is on the Democratic side. Does she have any specific priorities for the state of Alabama that our friends on the right as well as our friends on the left would find beneficial for the state?
Well, that's the thing about the Alabama delegation a lot of people don't know about is they actually all get along.
Mm-hmm.
They have a meeting with members only, and the members come to that meeting and they talk about what's best for the state. This
Absolutely.
Has been led since, my understanding, since we had Richard Shelby in office
mm-hmm.
as a congressman.
Right.
So it's getting your congressman, Mr. Carl, you know, on board with it and getting the new members, Barry Moore as well,
mm-hmm.
to come to that table and talk about what's good for Alabama. Congresswoman Sewell is considered a moderate, and she understands what you can do in Alabama is definitely not the same thing that you can do in New York or California.
Right.
So she votes for the state. She votes for her constituents. And we vote for the district.
Absolutely.
That's how she's always been.
And it's interesting that you mention that because I have friends all over the country and internationally as well, as I know you do. And as I know, Congresswoman Sewell, given her pre-government background, has as well. But I often tell people that the Alabama Democrat has a tendency to be more center-left than far-left. And that does not mean that we do not love the enthusiasm and passion that comes from our progressive brethren and sisters, but that we are, in fact, you know, much more moderate than perhaps some of the national language coming out of the National Democratic Party would suggest.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Like, even on the minimum wage, we understood and we actually put forth a bill in the last Congress that said do it based on states, not just a blanket $15 an hour, because maybe a $15 an hour is too steep for cities like Selma,
right?
Cities like Marion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I did want to touch on this just because I think it's important for us to talk a little bit about this, given the history that was established this week. We know that there was a rally that happened in Washington, D.C. proper, where you had a large group of people who were exercising their constitutional right to protest. But some subset of those individuals crossed the proverbial line and upon entering the United States Capitol, created a situation that was violent and ultimately led to at least five individuals losing their lives. I think probably three of them directly related to the incident and then a couple of them with medical incidents that kind of came out of the incident. We were watching Facebook and seeing postings from Congresswoman Sewell as well as other members of the delegation where there were some extremely fearful moments. You know, the one image that continues to stick in my mind was when the Capitol Police had the chamber barricaded and they had their weapons drawn. So with that as the backdrop, let me start off by saying, how is Congresswoman Sewell doing? How is the D.C. staff that was a part of that challenging evening, how are they doing?
Well, luckily, we because of COVID, we didn't have many staff members there.
Okay.
Our chief and the congresswoman was there, of course. The congresswoman was actually in the chambers, and mm-hmm. she was shaken up.
Right.
She was shaken up. My chief of staff had to lock herself in the office
mm-hmm.
and barricade the door.
Right.
And she was very shaken by this. So the congresswoman, as of today, I actually spoke to her maybe about 30 minutes ago.
Okay.
She's doing much better. And she appreciates all the thoughts and prayers that she's been receiving over the last couple several days.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was interesting listening to some of the interviews that were happening afterwards, particularly some of the interviews that were coming from former military folks, and to hear them talk about mentally getting back in that space where they were having to contemplate things like, you know, fighting their way out of a closed or confined space. You know, that's something that we train to do when we're on active duty. You're just not expecting to have to go into that frame of thinking when you're just doing your job at the United States Capitol.
Absolutely. And she's incredibly disappointed in some of her colleagues that kind of tried to normalize this violence and this rhetoric and conspiracy theories. It was a lie. They lied about the outcome of this 2020 election. They knew that President Trump didn't have a shot to change this election. And what we saw as a result of that was the actual storming of the Capitol. I mean, they're saying that the last time this happened was at the War 1812.
Wow. You know, it's interesting to think through this because this is a topic that I've talked about quite a bit, a number of times on the radio, primarily during Midday Mobile or Mobile Mornings, where I banter back and forth with the primary host, Sean Sullivan. And I think all of us can acknowledge that there are things in our electoral process that can be better, and that there are limited instances of fraud during every election cycle. But as we work to figure out how to come up with a more consistent methodology that can be applied across the board, we have to agree on what the facts are before we can start to debate what the facts mean. And that's the thing about some of the language that I've heard post-election that that has been concerning. So my hope and prayer is that we will be able to get to a place where we can do the bipartisan work, really identify what those risks are, and then work to mitigate those risks.
Right. I mean, I remember a time when you had to have Republicans' help to pass bills, when it was normal to actually not get everything you wanted in legislation because ideas, I mean, Americans are a melting pot, and we try to take everybody's idea to make the perfect policy. But
absolutely.
Again, there's never any perfect policy, but there's really, really good policy. And I think with liberal policies, moderate policies, and conservative policies, we can push the envelope forward in America.
Absolutely. Well, Ollie, we're coming to the end of this particular segment. We have, call it just a little bit more than a minute left. So just take time and let us know any parting words that you want to pass on your behalf or on behalf of Congresswoman Sewell to our listening audience.
Well, again, thank you for allowing us to do this. I know we don't represent Mobile County, but Mobile County is in the state, and every bill that's passed in Washington affects the entire state. And what I think the Congresswoman would definitely want everybody to know is that if you're an Alabamian and you need help, don't hesitate to call us. We might not be representing you guys, but we'll try to figure out a way to get some answers for you.
All right. Thank you so much for that. We really do appreciate it, and we will look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you.
So, you know, Aquilin, just right before we go into the break, it's interesting. I had the opportunity to speak to a group of Terry Sewell's individuals who are interested in applying to service academies. Mm-hmm. And similar to what Ollie Davidson was talking about, the fact that they reached out to me to help them is a testament that they're willing to go above and beyond to make sure that the folks in their district have the information that they need in order to make a quality decision.
Absolutely.
And I think the more that we're able to work across the congressional lines and district lines, that positions us to have a good impact on the overall community.
It's all for one and one for all.
Indeed, indeed. Well, we are at the bottom half of the hour, so we're going to go to a news break and some commercials, and then we will be back on the other side. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do, and don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just joining us, in the top half of the hour, we were very blessed and honored to have Mr. Ollie Davidson, who is the Deputy District Director for Congresswoman Terry Sewell, coming out of Alabama District 7. He provided us with a legislative update, and we talked about how the legislative agenda would change based upon the fact that the Democratic Party will be in control of both the legislative and executive branches here after January the 20th. The last topic that we started to talk a little bit about were some of the implications associated with what happened up in Washington, D.C. earlier in the week. And specifically, I'm talking about the challenge to the certification of the results of the Electoral College. So one of the things that we saw from our local Baldwin County delegation is that they actually put together a statement to provide the community with their point of view. So with that, I'd actually like to bring on Mr. Jason Fisher. Jason, are you on the line?
I am, Robert. How are you?
I am great. It's good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours.
So for the listening audience, Mr. Jason Fisher is the chair of the Baldwin County Democratic Executive Committee and also the former field representative for Senator Doug Jones in this area. So, Jason, looks like you guys had a press release going out.
We did. You know, with the acts of Wednesday being so prominent, being so just almost unbelievable, I think we had to respond. And it's you know, it's something to you know, for us to make sure that we got our voice heard about how our elected representatives were handling that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the Electoral College certification process is generally ceremonial.
Right.
And it was, there was going to be an objection, but to have seven of our nine federally elected representatives vote to object was just an embarrassment to the state and our region.
You know, it's interesting because you had emphasized initially that at this point in time, it was largely ceremonial, right? So most of the true technical work had already occurred. So I'm going to take just a second to remind the listening audience what the checkpoints are. So on the general election day, everyone votes. Then votes in our country happen and are managed by states. So after the vote happens, they're certified by folks in the states. And some of these states in question had Republicans who were in the oversight and leadership responsibility. And to a person in all the states, those Republican-led states, they were all certified. Then after that, you have the Electoral College actually ends up meeting and they vote. So there have already been three checks in the box. And then the fourth one that I want to highlight is the fact that when individuals felt as if something was not happening that was appropriate, they went to the court system. And pretty much to a person, the court either determined that there was no evidence of widespread voter fraud or that the people filing the cases didn't have standing. So before we even got to January 6th, we had already gone through four separate stages.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, including in that, as you mentioned, the lawsuit that Alabama joined from Texas. So if you say seven out of nine of our federal officials that vote, you also have to include our attorney general who joined that lawsuit.
That's right.
Steve Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very disappointing to be a part of that that circus. And I think that it just gives Alabama a black eye and further puts us down that road of division and kind of hate in politics, which is something that I know we've talked about, and we want to rid our country of that vitriolic type of nature in politics. We've got to be able to start with this process.
And yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think, you know, the representatives of Alabama, and particularly those that are new to the process, they do owe our citizens an apology, at least an apology. for putting us through this.
So Jason, let me ask you this. When did y'all make a decision to issue the press release? Was it before or after you had the folks who crossed the line and started committing, insurgent type of violent type of things within the four walls of the Capitol? When did y'all make that decision?
Yeah, I think it was after, and
it
was watching the insurrection happen, the acts of sedition, the incitement of the mob, and to object at the beginning of the process for political ambitious reasons or political opportunism is one thing, which I think there's a lot of that happened, and our delegation is partly to blame for that. But it's another thing to continue on that path after the Capitol was attacked by this angry mob and continue the objection process when there's not a shred of evidence, as you suggested. There were over 50 lawsuits that were brought by the Trump campaign or parties that thought they had standing. And one of those lawsuits, I think it was one in Pennsylvania for a poll watcher, that's the only time that something was that made it through the judicial process and that a judge agreed.
Right.
So the federal level and a state level, lawsuits were dismissed. There's not a shred of credible evidence out there that this election was in any way mired with voter fraud.
You know, as you were going through that, there were two things that popped into my head. And I actually want to start on Pennsylvania, because Senator Hawley out of Missouri, he was the one who is really pushing this issue of Pennsylvania. And here's the part that I actually thought was interesting. Folks globally, so if you went and listened to what Representative Mo Brooks said yesterday on Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan, he describes illegal votes from the perspective of a non-citizen voting, right? And he used as a, for example, something that was happening out of Kansas. So we know that you have three basic requirements to vote. You have to be a U.S. citizen, you have to be over 18, and you have to be a resident of the area where you are voting, right? So the concern that Mo Brooks articulates is it's kind of objective truth, right? We do not want people who are non-U.S. citizens voting. Senator Hawley, when he talks about the state of Pennsylvania, was literally talking about the rules. So rules were established by the state legislature, which is in accordance with the Pennsylvania state constitution. And then there were individuals in light of COVID who are making decisions with things like mail-in ballots, how long you would be willing to accept them, et cetera, et cetera. Now, they're calling that fraud, but the people who voted under the rules of the game that were there were actually doing it with positive intent. So I find it interesting that from a strategy perspective that they're attempting to conflate these two things, something that, we could all agree with Representative Brooks that we don't want non-U.S. citizens voting, and we should put practices in place to ensure that if people are slipping through, the number of people slipping through is small. But there is nothing in traditional conservative philosophy that would suggest that a traditional conservative would want the federal government to be more involved in the election. You would want that to happen at the state level, and the fact that they're challenging it because they don't like the result seems disingenuous at best.
Yeah, I think it's political opportunism. There's a fear that some of our politicians have, whether it's in Alabama or other states, that the factor of Trump being out there and endorsing a primary candidate against them could potentially put them out of a job.
Sure.
And so they've got to be, just as Trumpy as Trump is himself. And I think that we've fallen into this trap over the last 4 years of who could be more Trump-like.
Exactly.
We don't have to look more farther than Tommy Tuberville to really understand that was his entire playbook for the election, in the primary or in the general election. And unfortunately, what we get left with is, politicians that are hollow. They don't have ideas and substance. They, in Tuberville's case, he doesn't understand the three branches of government.
Right.
So we never had an opportunity to vet that. And we've got to get rid of that type of thing in politics. That's what's driving us farther apart.
You know, here's the thing that's actually interesting and in a reference to former Senator Doug Jones at this point. So I had the opportunity to interview him on this show. I know you had the opportunity to work for him. And when people talk about these hot button issues, clearly we have some differences of opinion. But whenever we started to line list out the 21 bipartisan bills that were co-led by a member of the GOP and signed by President Trump, no one could ever identify one of those bills that they were opposed to. I just find that fascinating.
Right, right. And those were important bills. You know, there was the HBCU permanent funding bill.
Mm-hmm.
There was the repeal of the military widows tax, which...
Oh, my gosh. Wasn't that amazing?
You know, it's something that it's hard to believe that it took 40 years to do that, but it did. And Senator Jones got that done. And so there was a bipartisan nature to those conversations and those discussions that happened. And there are good people on both sides of the aisle, but unfortunately they get drowned out. Their voices get drowned out by the extremes on the far left or the far right.
Exactly.
And what we've got to do is have more consensus makers in the middle, people that want to work together and get things done for the people.
Yeah, and that's very important. And I know these are conversations that we've had both publicly and privately for years. And one of the things that I definitely appreciate is the leadership that you have provided in collaboration with our friends from Baldwin County, as well as the personal sacrifices that you have made when you chose to serve on Senator Jones's staff. It's very important that we continue to have good people involved. And it's through these rational kitchen table type of conversations that we'll actually be able to continue to move our state forward. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. We really appreciate it. Give Aquilin and my love to Kenzie.
Please
and
do.
We will look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, Jason.
I will do, guys. Thank you. Appreciate
All right,
it.
Take care now. Okay. Well, that was Jason Fisher, who took a little time to talk to us. So at this time, we're going to go to our last break of the evening. We'll see you here in a few minutes. Stay tuned to Kennedy for Alabama.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Lines are open at 251-343-0106. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are with us before the break, we'd like to take one last opportunity to thank Mr. Jason Fisher, who is the chair of the Baldwin County Democratic Executive Committee, for joining us tonight and sharing a few thoughts with us about the events that have occurred this week. So with that, we're going to go back to the phone lines and see who we have on. Hello, you're on the phone with Kennedy for Alabama.
Hi, Bobby. This is Scott Hodenstein. How are you tonight?
Hey, Scott. How you holding up?
I'm hanging in there. 2021's... trying to outdo 2020 so far, but hopefully things get better.
Hey, it definitely looks like that. But first things first, Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to the family. Hope all is well.
Thank you. Happy birthday to everyone on the other end, too.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So for the listening audience, Scott Hodenstein is one of my classmates from the United States Naval Academy, class of 1992, Fortune Favors the Bold. And he was recently the Democratic nominee for House District 57 in Florida. So what has been going on? What are your thoughts about the things that have happened this week?
So this week made me think about a Bible verse that popped up in my daily reading during the campaign.
Okay.
And I want to share it with everyone. It's Romans chapter 16, verses 17 and 18. And what it says is, I appeal to you, brothers, to watch out for those who cause divisions and create obstacles contrary to the doctrine that you have been taught.
Mm.
Avoid them. For such persons do not serve our Lord Christ, but their own appetites. And by smooth talk and flattery, they deceive the hearts of the naive.
Mm.
And I got to tell you, since Wednesday, I've been thinking about how much our country needs healing and reconciliation.
Right.
In order to have healing and reconciliation, you also need accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So those thoughts have been weighing heavily on me this week.
Yeah, and I think it's important to make a distinction between spirited debate, even enthusiastic and passionate advocacy, and that proverbial line where it crosses into something different. The thing that struck me most about the week were the attempts at whataboutism. You know, when folks over the summer, when we were having some of the conversations about relationships between the police and other members of the community, how folks would instantly go to that and be like, what about that compared to what happened in Washington, D.C.? And we've stated before, and we'll continue to state now, that we are not advocating violence in any situation, right? We believe in people's right to express themselves and to do that passionately. But there was some point in time where that march to the Capitol proper crossed a threshold as people were trying to go through places that were barricaded, where it definitely crossed the line. So.
And what I think with the difference between the summer and what happened this week, I think comes down to accountability of both our leadership and accountability of information.
Okay.
When you use false information to incite people to violence, that's different than watching videos of unarmed black people being murdered in front of you.
Right.
And we need to be more careful in how we convey information and what we choose to believe. I've appreciated you explaining a lot during the show today about how the process should have worked and how especially the almost 140 people, 7 of the 9 Alabama delegation, who objected to the process which followed the Constitution, the electoral process.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I wanted to emphasize as well, and this is me speaking personally as in this chair as a political commentator, is I don't fault them for objecting. If they believe that they needed to object to the certification of the Electoral College, so be it. What I would have preferred is to see, quote, the evidence, end quote, that informed that objection, because then we can have a rational conversation about whether or not we agree or disagree with that evidence. What I have taken away from this whole thing is that what has been presented as evidence is more appropriately labeled as risk. So this is something that could have happened at the theoretical level. And sure, we should come up with some things to mitigate those risks, as opposed to something that in fact occurred and nobody's listening to it.
And I would probably disagree with your conclusion that it was okay to object.
Okay.
Because there was no evidence, and we had gone through the process of state certifying the vote. States that had Republican governors and secretaries mm-hmm. of state and legislatures
right.
and courts. And if we want to talk about our country and the Constitution, there's the 10th Amendment, which reserves elections to the states, and Article 4 of the Constitution, where we should give other states full faith and credit
mm-hmm.
for their actions.
Right.
And to continue it, fed into, even if your words were not inflammatory, certainly those 140 senators and congressmen, their actions were inflammatory.
Okay. Well, I neglected to mention that in addition to your political runs and us being classmates at the academy, that you are a civics teacher by background, so you come to this conversation with some subject matter expertise. Well, Scott, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us for a few minutes. I know from time to time people ask, why is it that I talk to people from Georgia and Florida and Mississippi and Tennessee and other places around the country? I say it's because it's important that we compete and share our thoughts in every corner of this country, because that's what's going to make the country better. So thank you for joining us tonight.
Absolutely. It was great being with you.
All right. Love to the family.
Same to you.
Well, that was Scott Hottenstein, who is one of my classmates from the Naval Academy and one of my best friends. So thank you to him for calling in tonight. Thank you to Mr. Jason Fisher for calling in. And also thank you to Mr. Ollie Davidson for calling in as well. This is what we do at Kennedy for Alabama, is we try to bring folks to the microphone who have a perspective on what's happening in the world. And then you listen and you decide. So thank you guys so much for tuning in to our first episode of 2021. We will look forward to talking to you soon. Have a good week. Stay safe.